We got into it at the end of the day because we wanted to live in Montana and we wanted to pursue the entrepreneurial life. And we also really liked ice cream.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. Ice Cream Community and You is how Sweet Peaks describes its tasty mission. Founded in 2010 in Whitefish, Montana, Sweet Peaks has grown to 6 full-time and 2 seasonal shops across 3 states. Using local ingredients, Sweet Peaks has come up with creative flavors like avocado toast, maple bacon, and butter biscuit with strawberry jam. Today on Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, co-founder Marissa Keenan shares stories about the company's success, growing pains, and the cutthroat world of ice cream treats. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Marissa, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I've heard it said, there's no such thing as bad ice cream. And, you know, that might not be true. But what is true is there is great ice cream. So what makes Sweet Peaks great?
This is one of the most commonly asked questions.
Good,
I think
I'm glad.
So we're starting off on the right foot. So what makes Sweet Peaks great? I've had a lot of really great ice cream all across the country, all across the world. And I've also had a lot of the ice cream that we make. And I think and know that it really is great. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're making it in small batches. We are thinking about the ingredients that we're using and the flavor combinations that we're doing. We are trying to incorporate as much as we can things that are local to the Rocky Mountains and to the region that we are in, and saying, how can we put mint that's grown in Creston, Montana, into our mint ice cream to give it that Montana, that Rocky Mountain flavor? And how do we get that to come across so beautifully in ice cream so that people feel as though they're kind of licking a little bit of something that's really, truly made here? And I think that's one of the reasons that Sweet Peaks is so good, and that's what makes it great. But it's not just the ice cream. A lot of your food experiences have to do with the experience as well.
So why did you and your husband, Sam, get into this business?
We got into it at the end of the day because we wanted to live in Montana and we wanted to pursue the entrepreneurial life, and we also really liked ice cream. And so those three things together seemed like it was a perfect combination. It really started with this idea that I had of an ice cream sandwich company. Sam loves cookies, and I really loved ice cream and had been making it at home, and had this idea that, what if I had a push cart and it was in the summer only, and we made these ice cream sandwiches and they were in the shape of triangles, and they would be called Sweet Peaks, and they would be named and representative of the Sweet Peaks, the peaks of Glacier National Park, because we live right on the edge of that in Montana. And so we'd come up with all these flavor ideas, and we kept making ice cream at home. I kept doing a bunch of research about ice cream, cookies, all the culinary side of things. And from that, it just bloomed into, maybe it needs to be more than a cart. Maybe it needs to be more than just ice cream sandwiches. And that's where it really came from.
There's a lot of brands out there. It is a very competitive space. People have their favorites. How do you position your brand in this, you know, fast-paced industry?
You know, someone once told me that a rising tide raises all ships. I think that's a pretty common phrase. And I truly believe that it's also true of being in a lot of different industries, but it works in ice cream. There is plenty of space for everyone to have their favorite ice cream shop and their favorite flavor that might not be the flavor that we make. What I try to do and what we try to do when people come in our store is have a little bit of something for almost everyone. And when you have competition, That's going to push you, I would hope, to do better, to constantly look towards the future and to what you're going to make next. And as long as that also comes from a place that is going to serve not only your business and your idea, but your guests, and it's not always about looking over your shoulder or in front of you to see what everybody else is doing, then there's nothing wrong with that. I am supportive of the idea that there's more than one ice cream shop out there.
Were you cognizant of how competitive the ice cream business is?
No, I had no idea. For a couple of reasons. Because when I looked around at what was happening in not only Montana, but really more of the Pacific Northwest and the Rocky Mountains, we don't have the ice cream culture, I truly believe, that has been so embedded into the culture of the East Coast or even to the South or other areas. I mean, I think even California probably has a little bit of that, you know, summer nostalgia of having the ice cream cone than we really did. And I grew up visiting family on the East Coast, Boston, Martha's Vineyard, which is in Massachusetts, and all those areas. And my cousins would take me out for ice cream every single evening after dinner. We'd go to an ice cream shop. And my grandfather, who is from Pennsylvania and lives in Montana, he retired to Montana, he would feed my brothers and I ice cream every single night after dinner in these same bowls, and that was our tradition. And I didn't see it around me, but I had that history with my own upbringing.
Well, what you bring up an important point. Many places in the country, you have some of the chains like Baskin-Robbins or Ben & Jerry's. But back east, in places that you talked about, there were ice cream shops that did nothing else but sell ice cream. You know, other places in the country have desserts or they have a restaurant and they have ice cream as an add-on. But in New York and New England area, there were specific shops and people were loyal to those shops.
It was their neighborhood place. Usually had a family name behind it. They've been doing it for years. And this is where you went if you were in this neighborhood. And that was a part of that culture and community. But I didn't see that in where we were. And so there is this competition that you find out about because of, you know, freezer space and grocery stores and all of those type of things. But to be honest, the ice cream that I wanted to make and what I wanted to do and we wanted to, it wasn't here yet. You've kind of heard of it also. So we started in 2010. Mm-hmm. And right on around that time, I also didn't really realize that there was what's called sometimes third wave ice cream, where it was like reinventing the whole ice cream concept for the third time, like the third generation of let's put really crazy flavors together. Let's collaborate with other businesses. And that was really happening. And I actually think we were on the edge of that third wave as well.
Is there a lot of trial and error in coming up with new flavors?
Yes. I mean, the good thing is that at this point, going into our seventh year, you learn to be an expert in a lot of food nuanced things and what's going to work when it's frozen and what happens when things are heated and how big of a chunk something should be and what flavors come out in a frozen state versus in a room temperature state. So you kind of put everything into different camps of different ingredients, and then you have a general idea of how things are going to work and what needs to happen. But we have experimented and we still experiment all the time. And there's things that are just hilariously horrible. And you say, okay, well, that's probably not going to make
it. Give me an example of something that's horrible.
Mustard. Mustard is not awesome. I bet there's somebody out there that could make mustard and ice cream. It tastes delicious. Or someone's going to say, oh, but there's these amazing mustard things you could do in ice cream. But the mustard ice cream that we made, it was not awesome frozen. It was definitely really, really bad when it was melted, when we went to melt it to throw it away. The smell was not great. I'm not the biggest fan of mushroom. There are ice cream places in the country that have put mushroom. I mean, there's ice cream places that have put lobster in ice cream, right? So mushroom was one that was like, well, let's go back to the drawing board on that one.
So your cohort in crime is your husband,
yeah,
Sam.
Yeah, Sam, yep.
How do you decide on the division of labor in the business?
There's a lot of areas that we both want to be really, really involved. When you work with your partner, that's not only your business partner, but your life partner, I think it's one of the most challenging, difficult, and also rewarding things you can do in business. Because at some point you have to kind of say, what do I care about so much that this is the thing that is very important to me in the company and I want to lead this part of it? And what are these other things that I really care about too, but I just need to recognize that this is my partner's zone of genius. This is the part where he's really good at it. And I just need to say, okay, I'm not going to pick the interior store colors because I know that that's his area and he wants to be the one that does that. So we've found our niche within our own company a lot by trial and error, finding what we're each really good at, and then figuring out the best way to compromise. We have entirely different taste buds. We have entirely different approaches to almost everything that we do. And somehow we've still been able to kind of come to a lot of common ground that is respect for each other and our different opinions, and also maintaining that vision at the end of the day.
So you got great ice cream.
Thank you.
And you've, you know, worked at it, and you have formulas and flavors, but there's the business side of things. How many employees do you have now?
So right now, well, let me first say we're very seasonal. As you can imagine, we're going to sell more ice cream in the summer in the warmer months than the winter months.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it goes. And so we have a lot of employees in the summer months, to the tune of about 100. Most of them are in the early years of college, high school, and it is a restaurant business. And so most of them are working part-time. It's long hours on your feet, scooping ice cream with a smile. So I don't want to burn them out. Year-round, we probably have closer to 50, and that includes ice cream makers, upper management, store managers. So we're adding almost 50 employees seasonally.
What prepared you and Sam for doing running a business that size? What'd you do before?
So before, I worked for a company in Big Fork for almost 5 years called Meisenberg Designs. And I managed people and worked with two incredibly smart entrepreneurs and artists and learned everything that I could from them. And then I also grew up in a restaurant family, so my parents owned a restaurant growing up, so I knew what it looked like to manage a lot of people in a fast-paced environment and the entertaining side of things. Sam had, before I met him, had started and opened a coffee shop, and he said that that was his college education and his where he made all the mistakes. So he said he knew everything that we needed to not do when we started Sweet Peaks because he'd already done everything.
So following up on that, since 2010, what's the biggest mistake you made?
You know, it's funny. So we borrowed $45,000 from my father-in-law, who either was really smart or really crazy to say, okay, I think I'll let you guys have $45,000, which in the grand scheme of things is really not that much. When you look at startup costs of ice cream companies, they always say you need 150. We had 45 that we borrowed from him. The first mistake that we made was we bought the wrong ice cream machine to the tune of $10,000. So right off the bat, we made a $10,000 mistake. That was like the financial mistake. I think that the next mistake that I didn't really realize until maybe even a couple of years later, and it was, I mean, everything can be fixable and everything is part of the learning path. But we didn't spend enough time thinking about our menu. And it seems really weird to think you're going into a food business and you don't think about your menu. But if you really think about it, we're selling ice cream. So it comes in a cone or a cup and you scoop it. But when I train my staff of scoopers and they come in and I say, have you ever scooped ice cream? Oh yeah, of course I've scooped ice cream. And you give them a scoop and they make this scoop of ice cream that's horribly ugly. They look like they don't know what they're doing, as if they've never held a scoop or a pencil before. And I say, it's okay. Your first one's going to be awful. And that's kind of how I felt about when we did our menu. We didn't think about something so simple and how your guests have to still be walked through everything in the way that's going to not only work for them, but work for you as well.
Right. Plus, you also have challenges of things like portion control.
Absolutely.
Right.
No, you have to really pay attention to also that we don't weigh our ice cream. So it is a repetitive action motion of making a scoop, and it has to look great. And it has to look great to my staff that they say this is right and that's super easy and we get it and every single one should look like this. But there's always going to be margin of error. And you want it to also look like the customer is getting what they're paying for and they're getting a quality product. And I also don't want them to eat too much because they'll feel sick and then they'll have a bad taste in their mouth about the experience. So there's what I call the perfect scoop, right? You know, there's the perfect amount that we're aiming for and doing that every single time.
So when did you add to your menu dog ice cream and why?
Oh my goodness. So the dog ice cream thing is something that was so funny. So our first shop was in Whitefish, Montana, and we happened to open up right next to a dog shop, dog grooming, bath, dog toys. It's our neighbor. And so we would not only watch all of the kids riding their bikes downtown Whitefish, Montana to the park that's just a couple blocks from us, but we'd also watch everyone walk their dogs to the dog shop right next to us and realized that we have this audience of dogs coming by, and we had a customer who would come in and buy a vanilla sugar cone for their dog at least once a week. And I thought, okay, wait a second. Why are we really giving this dog vanilla when they probably want a flavor that's more for their palate? Like, let's save the vanilla for the ice cream, the vanilla ice cream, and let's make them something that will be really funny and they'll also really enjoy.
Peanut butter
and beef broth and chicken broth. And then, you know, it's still ice cream. So if your dog should not be eating people food, it's still ice cream. So I thought, okay, wait, what about the lactose intolerant dog? So let's make dog popsicles that don't have dairy in them. And that's what we did. So we have dog bone shaped popsicles for the dogs as well.
We're speaking with Marissa Keenan, co-founder and co-owner of Sweet Peaks Ice Cream Shops. Marissa, how do you plan your expansion? You were one shop for a while, and all of a sudden now, you know, 8 years later, you have 6 full-time shops, 2 seasonal shops, a mobile unit, the mobile ice cream unit. How did you plan that, and what are you thinking about for the future expansion?
So, you know, I said that Sam, my husband and business partner, he's the signer. He's the go after it. He's got big vision. And I'm the one that sometimes scratches my head and then says, okay, I need to put together some numbers and think on this. And we have to kind of find a happy medium of just going for it or weighing all the cost benefit analysis and getting a little too technical. And so that's always been kind of the process of expansion. So the first expanded store that we opened was a seasonal only shop in Big Fork, Montana. And I grew up in Big Fork, and so it's right on the edge of Flathead Lake. It's very touristy. It's just this really busy place in the summer, and we thought if we could open up a seasonal shop there, it would give us a taste of what it's like to have more than one location. Can we do it? What does it mean to have something that is a 45-minute drive from one location to the other? How does that work? That initial expansion taught us so much about what it's like to manage people at different locations, that when you can't be there, how does that work? And it was seasonal. And so we could do it that first season and then stop and say, okay, what does that look like for having a second location that's year round and going from there? The growth that we had not only helped us to open up other stores, but we also realized, okay, we need a bigger kitchen. We need a bigger freezer. And so sometimes the growth happened because in order to support the store that we had at that point, we needed some more space. So how are we going to do it? Well, to justify more freezer space or more kitchen space, we needed a mobile truck. And so we could actually sell that product when we have essentially a 90-day window. Our window of ice cream in the season that's crazy is really 90 days. So everything I do, all the planning and organization has to be set up for that period of time. And then we can spend the rest of the year kind of saying, okay, what do we want to do next?
So what do you want to do next? You got 6 stores, the 2 seasonal shops. What are you thinking of next?
I have always been the procedural, the systems, the organization person. I try to do all of the things that makes everything run better the next day, the next week, the next season. We've spent almost 8 years now putting all those things in place so that when we want to open up another store, all that stuff is set. So that's really easy. It's the same concept with a little bit different feel depending upon the area that we're going into. The next thing that we're doing is to take this model that we've spent a lot of time building and putting together, and we're trying it out in Spokane, Washington. And so that will be the next store that we do open, and that will come with it, you know, a little bit different vibe than our other stores. It's in Washington. We haven't done anything in Washington yet. It's a little more urban than our other locations that are very much situated in mountain towns for the most part. And so navigating that space is what I'm interested in doing. And then the other thing too is, as we continue to expand, is to continue to stay connected to the current communities that we are in. And how do we become a bigger player in being a part of not only the business districts or the business, you know, environments that we're in, but also really those communities? You know, how do we become more involved in things that support our local community where those needs are? Whether that is, how can we support local kids? How can we prepare our local high schoolers for jobs after high school? How can I connect with schools, local farmers, local backpack programs as each store in each location, so that we have a long-lasting impact in the areas that have given back so much to us?
Sure, the old slogan, you know, doing well by doing good.
Yeah.
Are you in restaurant locations? Are restaurants putting you on their menu?
Yes. So we've been on restaurant menus for, I think, about 6 years now. You know, and that really started because it was a place where we could introduce ourselves to other people in the food community. And we could also kind of, you know, help to grow our brand and really collaborate with people that are cooking great food and making those connections. And going local and partnering with local businesses is so important and has been for a while now. And that was part of that connection. And that's always been really fun. We've developed a lot of great relationships from those relationships that have helped us, whether it's just questions about the food business, the food industry, or being able to kind of work together with their special projects.
What's your thinking about pints on retail shelves in grocery stores and specialty food stores?
You know, we have our pints in a couple locations, and it's something that it took us a while to get to that point. I kind of have an interesting, I think, idea behind it where, you know, at the beginning, if you have one account that sells your pints, what that really does is really helps foster your brand and identity, and people recognize that, and you are collaborating and it's a local product. But sometimes, in order to make that financially viable and to be a big part of your business, you really need 50 grocery stores, not just one, in order to continue to expand on that aspect of that wholesale. And one of the things that I've always thought is, I like being in the locations where we are in terms of like in those freezers at the grocery store. But one of the things that I really think makes Sweet Peaks great is not only that it's a really great product, but it's also where we get to do business and the environments that we create in our stores. So when you come in and have an ice cream cone, you're looking at some really fun art that my very artistic husband designed, and you're talking to a scooper who is going to tell you about their favorite places to eat, hike, swim in the area, and you're gonna learn a little bit about that. That whole experience creates something. When I onboard all of our new scoopers every season, and I started doing this a lot last year, I ask them, tell me something about your thoughts on ice cream or your first experience eating ice cream, anything. And we go around the room with sometimes 20 different people, and they tell me, oh man, my favorite ice cream shop when I was growing up was this place, or I would always go have ice cream with my grandpa and he'd always order mint chip, or my sister and I would go to the same soft serve place in the summer and we'd sometimes go twice a day. They'd say about their favorite ice cream cake for a birthday when they were five that they thought was the best thing. All these things have something to do with the experience of eating that ice cream, their neighborhood store, their memories. And I always say to them, okay, so guess what I want and wish for Sweet Peaks and for every single store is that we can become the company where all of the current guests at our shop have these stories to tell their kids or to tell somebody else or to tell that story moving forward. So that the one generation of scoopers that I have, when I say, tell me about your ice cream experiences, they're all going to be something about the first time they went to Sweet Peaks.
Do you have dreams about being a national brand?
I can say that I do not. I think that one of the things that we are moving towards and trying to work on right now is to be the ice cream of the Rocky Mountains. This is where we want to be. This is the environment that we know, and this is the place where we can create those relationships with other farmers, with other businesses, and this is where I'm raising my kids. I don't have aspirations of opening up a store in New York or LA or all over Florida or something like that. I want to do what I know how to do, and it's a commitment to the Rocky Mountain area.
So what's been your favorite success story so far of the business?
For me, the biggest success has been the fact that we really didn't know what we were doing. And that sounds so funny because you say, well, of course you kind of, you know, you figure it out and you know you were learning and nothing is wasted and you're always learning from something and you just take those next steps to get to the next place and things happen. But how incredibly green we were about so many things. And that has been the most surprising is that you actually can just learn and figure it out. And you have to at some point stop thinking that someone's going to tell you you can't do that. And then the other thing for me personally is seeing what I had no idea Sam could do. I had no idea how astute he was about guest experience. I had no idea that he was able to construct what he could construct. He does a lot of the build out of our stores, and it's his vision and his idea, and he takes unlikely things and turns it to an ice cream shop. And I really had no idea, and I'm really glad that he knows what to do, how to do it, because we would have been in a lot more trouble if he didn't.
We've talked a lot about making ice cream. We haven't talked a lot about making money, and not to divulge any secrets, mm-hmm. but when did you turn profitable?
Our second year.
That's impressive.
And I think for the most part, I was worried that I wouldn't be able to quit my job. And I had a really great job when we started. And one of the things that happened is that I would go from my day job, essentially, to my night job, which was making ice cream, and then back to my day job. And it was getting towards summer of 2010. And Sam looked at me and said, he was just committed to Sweet Peaks at that point, and said, this is your dream. You have to jump full in. I need you to help me. This is the thing. And I had been so worried about, I don't know. I don't know if we could do that. Can I actually quit my job? And can we do this? Are we going to be able to live off of this and support ourselves? And we were able to do it. And that is great. And so far, every single store that we have opened since that original Whitefish, Montana store has paid for itself within that first year. So within that first year of being able to open a store, they're profitable. It's working. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we do everything ourselves for the most part. Even though we're opening up, okay, the third store, the fourth store, we're still in there cleaning the floors, doing the painting, designing the layout. I don't hire another firm to come in and build me a $1 million store. We're building into it what we want, but it also just lowers those overhead costs.
So to our listeners who are budding entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. what advice do you give them about starting a business? Based on your, you know, the last eight years, you've had trial and error, you've had great success, your stores are profitable. What's the message?
What I tell people, and I am asked a lot about what are the resources that are out there? There are resources out there for small business. There are resources out there for people that have entrepreneurial ideas and aspirations. And the big thing I would say is do not stop learning and ask questions. If you have any idea of the field that you want to go into, go all in terms of finding somebody whose life you want or whose idea you like, and call them up and ask them the questions, whether it's the question of, where do you get your business cards? I really want to know where to buy my business cards, or how do I deal with this tax situation, or how important is it to do this over this? You know, ask questions, because if you can't ask the questions and you're not bold enough and brave enough to do that, then you probably shouldn't be starting your own business, because you have to put yourself out there and it's vulnerable and it's raw and you might fail and it might not work, but it's definitely going to fail and not work if you don't put yourself out there and ask those questions.
Well, on that, Marissa, thank you for joining us. You've been a delightful guest. Let's go get some ice cream.
Yeah, let's do it.
I appreciate you listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guest contact information and content from all our shows. Once again, I'm Arnie Sherman wishing you peace and prosperity. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.